Welcome to Ivy the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to Ivy the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on the show with us today Winston Ewart, a graduate student in the Department of Computer Science at Baylor University, who's a co-author of a recent paper with William Dembski and Robert Marks titled Evolutionary Synthesis of NAND Logic, Dissecting a Digital Organism. This paper was published in October 2009 in the scientific journal Proceedings of the 2009 IEEE International Conference on Systems, Man, and Cybernetics. And it is a critique of the Aveda simulation of evolution that has gotten quite a bit of attention from those who are interested in the topic of evolutionary computing. So, Winston, thank you very much for coming on the show with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, I have to say, Winston, it's not every day that we have a graduate student on this show, and the reason for that is probably apparent to any of our listeners who follow this issue. Graduate students are not often in a position where they are free to talk about their views on the topic of evolution because, unfortunately, there's been a lot of persecution of graduate students over the years when they come out against Darwinian evolution or in favor of intelligent design. Now, you have sort of already stuck your neck out here, and you've already really distinguished yourself being the lead author on a paper that's highly critical of the Aveda simulation. Originally, actually received a lot of attention because it was published in the journal Nature as a simulation that showed how to evolve biological complexity through a computer simulation. So we really appreciate you sticking your neck out here. Before we get going, though, into discussing the paper, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your own background and what first got you interested in evolutionary computing.
My own background is essentially that I was a computer nerd, and thus basically I studied computer science, and so I have a Bachelor's of Science degree from Trinity Western University in computer science. My involvement in evolutionary computing actually started when I read the book The Blind Watchmaker by Richard Dawkins. The book did not have the desired effect. Basically, in that book, he discusses the meatstasis like a weasel simulation as well as the biomorphs, which was sort of my introduction to the world of evolutionary computing. And I found that very fascinating. And so from that, I started to look at various simulations. And I wrote various simulations and started exploring that area.
Well, that's an interesting story that you have, Winston. I can actually identify with it a little bit. When I was an undergraduate, I too read The Blind Watchmaker, and it did not have, I think, its desired effect on me either. I actually ended up checking out the library copy of The Blind Watchmaker that I was reading at the time and brought it to a lecture by Richard Dawkins and had him sign the library copy at a lecture that he was giving. So if you go to the UC San Diego library and pick up The Blind Watchmaker, you'll find an autographed copy there. But enough of that. I'd like to get some more background on you in terms of how did you get involved with the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, which of course is a lab that has been started by William Dembski and Robert Marks to explore evolutionary computing and how it challenges Darwinian evolution. So, yeah, how did you get hooked up with those guys in the Evolutionary Informatics Lab?
Well, what I did was I started writing a paper based on what I'd learned from investigating simulations, sort of trying to make a case for intelligent design by looking at what these simulations could and couldn't do. After some time working on this, I let a local professor at my university read the paper. However, he was always too busy to actually read it. And after I annoyed him enough, he instead decided to send it off to William Dembski instead of reading it. The end result of that is that Dembski shared it with Dr. Marks, and Dr. Marks was apparently impressed, so he got into contact with me and then essentially asked me if I could come down to Baylor and be his research assistant to continue working with him and at the Evolutionary Informatics Lab. So after consideration, that's what I ended up doing.
Well, that's very interesting, Winston. I'm sure that they must have been impressed with the insight that you had into Aveda in order to bring you in to work on this project. I'd like to know, when you first read the Aveda paper, I'm guessing it was probably the 2003 paper co-authored by Richard Lenski in Nature titled The Evolutionary Origin of Complex Features. What struck you about what was wrong with the Aveda program, and how did you react?
I believe my reaction was something along the lines of, so... I don't recall being particularly impressed. It didn't seem to be doing anything in that paper that I haven't seen in other simulations. And it's just the same sort of rehash of, yeah, you can set up a simulation if you want that makes it work, but that doesn't actually say anything about what we would expect to find.
Now, of course, this paper by Lenski and Ofer and Penick and Christoph Adami in Nature has been widely cited as allegedly refuting the claims of ID proponents that irreducible complexity is a stumbling block to evolution. We'll get into that a little bit further in this podcast and whether or not their claims were valid. But let's talk a little bit about just some basic background on the Evita simulation and how this works. The Evita simulation claims to be a simulation of the evolution of digital organisms. So what exactly is a digital organism? And if you can boil it down to the basics, how do these organisms evolve in Evita?
The idea, of course, is that Evita is simulating the process of biological evolution. And biological evolution we can sort of consider as the change of organisms over time. So the organisms, as they undergo a process of natural selection and random mutation, hopefully develop complex features. So if we take it into a computer simulation where we apply, in the case of Evita, natural selection and random mutation to program, those programs are the analog of the biological organisms. So we call them digital organisms, sort of as an analog to what they'd be in biology. The basic idea of Evita is that you have these programs which are running, and each program is a list of instructions. And the idea is these instructions run, and they read some input in and push out some output. And the idea is you're trying to find a particular program that can produce the correct input for an output. For example, most people have at one point in time had some formulas burnt into their head, the formula for the area of a circle, so pi r squared. What that essentially is it's instructions that tells you how to take a radius and convert it to an area. You take the radius and you square and you multiply it by pi. And basically, these Evita programs are in the same way lists of instructions for taking some sort of input and performing a function. In the case of Evita, what we're trying to find is known as the EQDU function. And in a similar way, we're basically trying to find a formula through this search that produces the correct output, and actually when you feed in the inputs, it gives you the outputs the function would expect. Now, the way Evita works is it has a whole bunch of functions which it rewards, and as the process goes on, it selects for the programs which have the simpler functions together, and then from that, it manages to build upon those to make more complex functions, until in the end, it manages to produce the most complex function, which is this EQU.
I think that basically makes sense, Winston. That's a very helpful explanation of the Evita simulation. So before we get into your own research about Evita, we should probably also introduce some important terms that are used in your paper. And these terms, of course, relate to the information that is necessary for some search algorithm to find its target. And I would hope that maybe you could explain for our listeners the meaning of some of these terms, such as endogenous information or exogenous information or active information. Can you help our listeners understand those terms briefly here?
Firstly, we have the endogenous information, and that is basically how hard the search is that you're attempting to accomplish. The way I would look at it is, you imagine if you have a table, and you have a bunch of styrofoam cups sitting upside down on the table, and under some of the styrofoam cups, there are prizes. And the goal, of course, is to turn over a cup and find a prize underneath it that you can keep. Now, the endogenous information says how hard is it to find a cup which has a prize underneath it. So if you have more cups, that's going to give you more endogenous information because it's more difficult to find a prize. Or if you increase the prizes, that's going to decrease the endogenous information and make it easier. So essentially, that's just a measure of how hard the search problem is. Now, the exogenous information is related, but it's taking into account basically any strategy you're using in picking a cup. So maybe you know that the outside edges never contain any prizes. Thus, you could actually do a better job of picking a cup with a prize underneath it, and that's going to result in a lower exogenous information. Basically, any time you can decrease the exogenous information, it's because you know something about the target you're trying to find. Now, you could have that because you have to know what locations prizes might be in. Maybe you're peeking under the cups, or maybe someone is giving you hints. All of that could contribute to being able to perform better. And the active information is just the difference between these two. Basically, it's the amount of assistance provided to you to help you find the target of the search. In the case of the example, to help you find the prizes underneath the cups.
Okay, well, that helps a lot, Winston. Thank you very much. Let's turn to Evita, if you don't mind. How exactly is active information added to Evita's evolutionary search? Your paper says that Evita uses, quote, stair-step active information, unquote. So what exactly do you mean by that in your paper?
Well, the stair-step active information is the big source of active information. And the idea of the stair-step is you could have a search problem, such as the case of Evita, where it's too difficult to find your target just by randomly jumping and picking points in the search space. So the idea of the stair-step information is to make it a gradual process. So, I mean, if you could imagine, it would be very difficult to jump from the first floor of your house up to the second floor. But it's very easy if you have a staircase, because you can make each step in very easy terms. In the case of Evita, what they're doing is they have components, and they're rewarding the building of components, which can be combined into the final function. An analogy might be that, such as the mousetrap, as many of your listeners are probably aware, you have the example of a mousetrap which has a platform and a spring and a catch and a wire and these different components. And so it's quite conceivable that it would be too hard to hit upon this whole collection of parts in some sort of random fashion. However, if I reward you for developing the platform and the spring and the catch and all these components independently without needing any context to them, and I reward you for getting them to the correct configuration, and then I reward you for putting them all together, I've actually created a step-by-step process by which you can reach the end result. And that's essentially what they're doing in Evita. EQU is actually built up of smaller components. And if you actually look at that list of instructions, that formula that produces EQU, you would see that it's actually inside there producing simpler operations. And those simpler operations are often constructed out of simpler operations yet again. And so because of that, that enables them to provide this step-by-step process, essentially this roadmap that allows them to go from zero to EQU, because they provided this information for how to reach the end target.
So what are the implications of the fact that Evita smuggles in this active information? Does that mean that it doesn't truly model Darwinian evolution?
Well, Darwinian evolution would assert that it's a universal solvent, essentially that it can build anything. But I think what this shows is that, no, it can't build anything. It needs the active information. It can only build EQU because it's been provided with hints of how to get there. So insofar as Darwinian evolution claims it can build anything without assistance, that's not true. You need the assistance of this active information for it to work.
Winston, when I first read the 2003 Nature paper about Evita, I was really struck by its admission, where it said that, quote, "where only EQU was rewarded, none of these populations evolved EQU," unquote. And I'm sure that this was something that you obviously really took note of, because your paper talks about this. It seemed to me that what they were saying was when they took away any stepwise advantages and didn't reward a complex function until it was there, fully functional, then Darwinian evolution didn't work. So this, to me, seemed like the precise kind of situation that exists with irreducible complexity, where there is no function to provide a selective advantage until many components are present all at once and fully functional. So even though Evita has been trumpeted by its creators as a refutation of irreducible complexity, it seemed to me that when they truly modeled irreducible complexity, that Darwinian evolution failed. So I would like to ask you, is this a correct interpretation? Because your paper hints at this by quoting the Evita paper and stating, quote, "hardwired stair-step active information is essential in order for Evita to produce results in reasonable time," unquote. So what are the implications of your finding here?
Well, when they aren't rewarding any sort of intermediate components, what they've essentially done is they've turned off their active information from the stair-step information source. And, of course, since that's their major source of information, they don't have enough information left to actually find any targets. Now, with irreducible complexity, their argument would be that, basically, while no direct pathway exists to build an irreducibly complex system, there's always going to be these indirect pathways which get there. And that's why they have things like the type 3 secretory system or other alleged ways of getting around the irreducible complexity. And so what they're trying to simulate is a case where this pathway exists, but they've deliberately put the pathway there. So it's hardly surprising that I can construct a situation in which a pathway exists to evolve anything I want. I mean, if you let me select what intermediate stage is rewarded, I can evolve anything you want. The question is whether we would expect such an intermediate pathway to be there in nature. At best, I think Evita is irrelevant on that point, because they've deliberately put a pathway there. At worst, the fact that they had to deliberately put a pathway there indicates that perhaps we wouldn't and shouldn't expect there to be any such pathway in nature.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Winston, and it almost seems like they designed the program to have the outcome that they were desiring. So I know that this is a technical paper, but if you can summarize your paper, what novel contribution does it make to our understanding of Evita?
Well, the one is that we measured the actual difficulty of the Evita problem. So we measured it to be what we describe as 40 bits. Now, that basically means that getting an EQU program out of Evita is about as hard as getting a head on the coin flip 40 times in a row. Now, that's probably more than you want to be trying to attempt under normal circumstances, but given the amount of trials that Evita is doing, that's not a huge amount. The other thing is that we actually were able to numerically measure the active information and numerically measure how much these different intermediate stages they've added were adding and how much they were assisting reaching the target. And I think that numerical demonstration is very hard to refute.
Well, and you note in your paper that the creators of Evita stated that they aimed to, quote, show how complex biological functions can originate by random mutation and natural selection, unquote. Do you think that Evita is successful in showing that?
Well, I think Evita is successful in showing that natural selection, random mutation, and active information together can produce complex features. But I think the active information is very important there, and without that assistance in their configuration of their fitness space and how they set it up, it simply wouldn't succeed. The random mutation and natural selection are simply insufficient to reach the ends.
Just to make this clear, active information is basically intelligent design. I mean, that's when an intelligent programmer is helping the search algorithm overcome its limitations, in this case, the limitations of natural selection and random mutation.
Right, yes. The active information essentially derives from prior knowledge about the problem you're trying to solve. So basically, it has to be assumptions about your search space, in particular, assumptions about how to find the target. And the only person that would have access to that information would be the person who's creating the simulation. So essentially, yes, it's intelligent design that's behind this.
Okay, well, your paper concludes with the exhortation that, quote, to have integrity, computer simulations of evolutionary search like Evita should make explicit the prior knowledge that gives rise to the active information in the search algorithm. Are you basically saying that Evita's programmers tried to represent their simulation as a true model of Darwinian evolution when it wasn't, and that in reality their program was basically intelligently designed to evolve?
I don't think they were trying to sort of sneak the program and be deceptive about what it was. They fully believe that it's a perfectly good model of Darwinian evolution. But I think they haven't fully taken into account how much assistance they've provided to the process in order to make it work. That they've had to tell it, this is how you build an EQU. You build the smaller parts first, and you build on them. And so essentially what they've done is they've mixed intelligent design on their part with the genetic algorithm. And then they decide to give all of the credit to genetic algorithm as if it's an amazing thing, when the credit really is due to the intelligent design and the intelligent decisions they were making during the process. So it's really the intelligent design that's responsible for the success of the simulation.
Winston, that's a very clear explanation of the Evita program, and I just really appreciate the work that you've done here. What advice would you give to, say, an undergraduate who's studying computer science and is interested in getting involved with this sort of research, Winston?
Well, I'm somewhat hesitant to give advice to anyone because I'm still not sure I figured out what I'm doing myself. I think the really important thing for anyone wanting to get involved from a computer science perspective is that you really need to understand the evolutionary process. And I think you really need to look at these simulations and write your own simulations and really understand what this process can and can't do and under what circumstances it works and doesn't work.
We really appreciate your time, and I just want to congratulate you on getting your paper published. This is an excellent paper. It's very clear that you have some very unique insights into the Evita program, and this is just more evidence not only that intelligent design is doing research and that there is credible research that challenges Darwinian evolution, but that it's attracting the interest of graduate students who are now doing this research and even publishing it. So I hope that your work is an inspiration to those out there who are wondering, is there even a place for me to do ID research? And the answer is, of course, yes. The Evolutionary Informatics Lab is a great hub of ID-related research. There's other research going on at the Biologic Institute that's more actual laboratory bench research, not just theoretical, although, of course, that is going on as well. And there's a lot of places within the ID community for graduate students and young scientists to contribute. So, Winston Ewart, I really want to thank you for your time and the work that you've done, and thanks for being on the podcast with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Again, the name of the paper is Evolutionary Synthesis of NAND Logic Dissecting a Digital Organism. It's available, actually, at the website of the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, which is evoinfo.org. So go check it out and take a look at all the interesting research that's going on there. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.